You're listening to The Taylor Marshall Show, episode 73, How to Be a Man. Today we're going to talk about advice for young men, how to be a man. The target audience for today's episode is age 16 to 30. And we're going to talk about confidence and appearance and spirituality and knowledge and skills, because it was all summed up so well by Napoleon Dynamite and Pedro Sanchez.
Well, nobody's gonna go out with me.
Have you asked anybody yet?
No, but who would? I don't even have any good skills.
What do you mean?
You know, like nunchuck skills, bow hunting skills, computer hacking skills. Girls only want boyfriends who have great skills.
Aren't you pretty good at drawing, like, animals and warriors and stuff?
Yes. Probably the best that I know of.
Oh, it's so good to be back with you on the microphone here, having a great day, getting ready to ship out to Rome, Italy. I've talked about this a little bit over at the blog at taylormarshall.com. I was asked, last year to be part of the Rome experience, which is, I don't know, for lack of a better word, it's kind of a gifted and talented program for seminarians to go to Rome for a retreat and also to become acquainted with the history, the art, the customs, and the culture of the Vatican, so that our new and young priests are well connected with the patrimony of being a Roman Catholic. So, as you know, I wrote a book a few years back called The Eternal City. It's Rome and the Origins of Catholic Christianity. It's a book about the theology of Rome, which you might call Romology. And I'll be over there for 3 weeks teaching seminarians there at the Vatican. I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait to be with these guys. They're already over there. But I'll be flying out and being there in June. So please pray for me. Most of all, pray for my family, pray for Joy and for the kids. It will be a hardship for them to be without dad and husband for a while, but I'll be there for 3 weeks and then I'll be coming back. In the meantime, so again, pray for them, pray for the seminarians, pray that I deliver some great lectures. And in the meantime, the podcast will go on even though I'm in Rome. I might record some anecdotes and some thoughts while I'm there, maybe while I'm in St. Peter's or at St. Paul outside the walls or in the Colosseum, or who knows. Or maybe I might just totally chillax and do nothing. But the podcast will go on because the Book of Revelation, the free course that I talked about and we did a poll on, is in effect, and I've already recorded the first 3 episodes. We're doing a multi-part series, a Catholic commentary on the Book of Revelation, the Apocalypse Catholic style. We had well over, I think, 700 of you participated in the poll, and there was a 98% request for a series on the Book of Revelation. And I've been rereading the Book of Revelation and writing notes and getting everything together. And these podcasts are going to be really awesome. Perhaps some of the best podcasts we've ever had on this podcast. So look forward to that. Look, the beginning of June when I head out to Rome, you'll start seeing these Book of Revelation podcasts. These are going to be, of course, faithful to the scriptures, Old and New Testament. We're going to be incorporating the church fathers. We're going to be incorporating the tradition of the church. This is going to be a audio, almost like an audio book, an audio commentary moving through chapter by chapter. I also polled you and said, should we do this as a 4-part, like a 10 or 12-part, or a 22-part, because there's 22 chapters of the book of Revelation. And the poll won 22 episodes. But I got to be honest with you guys. I just, first of all, it would exhaust me to do 22 episodes on the book of Revelation. I would love doing it, but I think it's just too much. And the reason I think it's too much is number two, I began to draft the notes and put together all of these podcasts and episodes. And I, you know, as I began to look at it, I realized, you know, things like the seven churches, which is in Book of Revelation chapter 2 and chapter 3, that can really be one podcast. Or, for example, the seven trumpets, you know, that goes from chapter 8 all the way to chapter 11. You know, that doesn't need to be 3 episodes. It could probably be 2, maybe 1, to cover all 7 trumpets and what they mean. So as I looked at it, I think 22 is probably a bit too ambitious. I think something more like 10 to 12 is going to fit the outline better. And so I'm going to send out the outline for you guys to look at. If you're a subscriber at taylormarshall.com, you'll get it. If you're not, no worries. Head over to taylormarshall.com and enter your email address, and you'll get free resources all the time, including a free ebook, Thomas Aquinas in 50 Pages. If you've ever wanted to study Thomas Aquinas, Catholic theology, Catholic philosophy, this is the best short book to introduce you to the terminology, the vocabulary, and the major concepts in Thomas Aquinas. It will really unlock Catholic theology for you. Well, today we are not going to do the book of Revelation, although I have started recording them. We're going to talk about masculinity, what it is to be a man, really advice for men. And I'm thinking in particular during this episode, advice for younger men. I get emailed and Facebook message a lot from young Catholic men who have questions about vocations, about, you know, seminary, priesthood, where to study, how to get married, advice for meeting girls and dating girls and all kinds of things. And this is a major need. And so I thought, well, maybe we'll do a podcast on that. And I think for all the ladies who are listening, I think you'll probably be entertained by it as well. Maybe get a little bit of an inside look into a young man's mind. And maybe you'll agree with some of the advice I give in today's show. Maybe you'll disagree. I'd love to hear from you. Just, you know, go to the show notes, go to taylormarshall.com, click on weekly podcast. You can find this episode, episode number 72, Advice on How to Be a Man, and leave a comment or leave a question. I'd love to engage with you there. But before we get into our advice for men, advice on how to be a man, we're going to start, as we always do, with our proverb of the week. And the proverb of the week this week comes from Proverbs chapter 19, verse 1. It goes like this: better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a man who is perverse in speech and is a fool. So it's better to be poor, you don't have any money, but you have your integrity, than it is to, you know, apparently be a rich man, but be perverse in speech and a fool. And notice here, it doesn't say morally evil. I think that goes along with it. But perverse in speech, you know, talking about foul things, you know, sexual perversities. I think this is the kind of thing here. And also being a fool. In the Jewish mind, being a fool is really, really bad, because it's the opposite of being wise. And, you know, the Old Testament has this great wisdom tradition, wisdom literature, to help the people of Israel to become wise. If you reject God's wisdom, you become a fool. And being a fool comes with being morally perverse, immoral, but also just plain stupid, making bad career choices, making bad choices in relationships, making bad financial decisions, making bad decisions about how you raise your kids. All of this stuff comes with being a fool, because wisdom incorporates not just perceiving the grand scheme of the universe as God has designed it. But also under it, in a subset, is prudence, which is a cardinal virtue. And that is making right decisions in view of the wisdom that you have. So Proverbs 19:1, I think, is a great introduction to this topic of advice on how to be a man. Now, I've given many keynotes and I've led retreats for priests and for married men on this topic of masculinity. And I talk often about, I have a lesson on St. Joseph. I have a lesson on, you know, how is it that we lost Catholic masculinity? How do we get it back? I also talk about how fathers can lead their families in devotions, in the rosary, how fathers can talk to their sons, their daughters, also how you can prevent your, you know, we can't prevent it 100%, but what you can do as a man, as a father, to ensure that your children continue to embrace the faith as they get older. Of course, there is free will, so we can't, of course, make 100% lock on this outcome, but there are things we can do to, as men, as fathers, as leaders, to make sure that our children, our grandchildren, those that are under our influence, do have a love for God and for their neighbor and for the true faith, for Christ and for his church. But we're not going to talk about those things so much today. And maybe in future podcasts, we can talk on some of those subjects. But today is really advice on how to be a man. And I'm talking especially to men who are from, I think, 16 to 30 in those years of development. And Aristotle, he, and Thomas Aquinas follows him while modifying it, as Thomas always does. Aristotle says that a man's life is divided into by sevens. The first 7 years are childhood. This is the, you know, age below the age of reason. And then, and this is why, by the way, you know, we usually have in the West children going to confession for their first time when they're around the age of seven, because it's at this time that the human develops the intellect and will so as to make moral judgments. And a moral judgment can lead to acts of virtue, good deeds, or it can lead to acts of vice, sins. And so children need to have access and recourse to the sacrament of penance, of reconciliation. So Aristotle says you got, you know, age infants, you know, from birth to age seven, and then from seven to age 14. And this is really where the will develops. The intellect is a little bit earlier. This is where the will becomes strengthened. And this is why in antiquity, children, especially girls, were not usually allowed to marry before the age of 14, because they wouldn't be able to make an act, a full act of consent with the will to marry someone till death do us part. And even I think now we've got a lot of going against us. 14 is way too early. And then from 14 for the next seven, that gets us up to 21. We arrive at a complete maturity. Well, actually not complete. I have a little bit more to say about that. But the intellect and the will have become fully formed. And what's interesting is medical psychology, you know, the study of the brain, especially as it relates to behavior, affirms this, that the brain doesn't really stop developing in a lot of us until, you know, we're well into college. But Aristotle before him sees that the perfect age is at age 30 or 33, because it takes about a decade of using your intellect and using your will in accord with real experience to develop the virtue of prudence. You can't really become a prudent person until you have intellect, a will, and then some experience. And Aristotle says, let's give them a decade of experience. So what this means is, you know, you are born into this world at around age 7, your intellect forms, your will's there. By age 14, your will's more developed. more advanced. And then by age 21, everything's kind of working together. And then give yourself another 10 years for experience. And this is where you start to see dangers and bad mistakes. So even when you're 18, 19, 20, you think you can live forever. You can speed. You can do drugs. You can do all these, you know, things, and nothing's ever going to happen to you. But by the time you're 26 and 27, you've had some friends who have died because they did stupid things. And you've seen some marriages crash and burn. And you've seen, you know, those guys who used to drink a lot get really out of shape and maybe have health problems. Or you've seen, you know, people overdose from drugs or ruin their careers or ruin their lives. By the time you turn 30 and you've had your intellect and your will and you've seen things happen in the world, you start to get, well, hopefully, not everybody does, but I think most people start to gain a little bit of this natural cardinal virtue of prudence. And this is why I think today's show is going to be dedicated primarily to younger men, ages 16 to 30, whatever, because this is the time when they're developing their intellect and their will, but also trying to gain prudence so they're not, as we saw in our proverb of the day, fools. So I'm going to go through four arenas of the young man and how he can improve himself. And the four arenas are, and this is not going to be super duper spiritual. One of the arenas is spirituality, but I'm a big believer because I love philosophy, and because I love St. Thomas Aquinas, well, I think because I'm a Catholic Christian, that natural virtue is important. The cardinal virtues are important. Being a real human being is important. And taking care of natural things like your emotional health and your relationships and your body and your diet, all of these things are important. They're important to you. They're important to God. And I think, you know, whether you're an older man or maybe you're a woman listening, I think a lot of things we talk about will apply to everyone, but I think it applies especially to younger men. So let's get started. The four areas or arenas that we're going to spend time in today are, first of all, confidence. Young men need to gain confidence, and I don't mean cockiness. I mean confidence. Second arena is going to be appearance. This has to do with your hygiene, but also the way you carry yourself and the way you dress and the way you do everything in the eye of others. The third is knowledge and skills. And the fourth is spirituality, which is, of course, the most important. You can have the first three and still not make it to heaven. You can have the first three and, you know, still blow up a lot of stuff in your life. You know, you can be confident, take care of your appearance and the way you're perceived in society, and have knowledge and skills and still crash and burn. So this fourth one is the most important. As we say always, St. Thomas Aquinas taught it to us, grace perfects nature. Grace heals nature. Grace elevates nature. So we're going to do the grace part last today. So let's start off with confidence. I have taught high school students. I have taught college students. And I've taught graduate students. And I've noticed, I don't know if it's just because I've gotten a little older and I've got a couple gray hairs now, but I've noticed that the young men, and I'm thinking particularly college men, 18 to 22, lack a lot of confidence. I don't know if my friends and I were like this when we were in college. I don't think we were. There is a reluctance to talk to girls. There is this tendency to do everything through text instead of face-to-face or talking. Even a tendency to avoid the phone, to avoid human interaction. I think when it comes to relationships, younger men rely way too much on things like Facebook and texting. I think this hurts their confidence. I think they've been raised in a digital era in which they have become well-equipped at communicating with their fingertips and discovering value through the social media. And I think that's going to be very helpful in the future. I think these are good skills. The social media and these platforms are not going to go away. You may hate for me to hear me say that. They're not going to go away. And I think as Catholics, as Christians, we need to use them. And I'm okay with them. I think if St. Paul were around today, he'd be tweeting up a storm. He'd be all over Twitter. So I think this is something that we need to do in a way that's safe. But I think in the same breath, we need to say maybe we've lost some confidence from it. And I'm talking about, you know, interviewing young men for jobs, which I've done as well, having one-on-one meetings with students. There seems to be a lack of confidence in the personal arena. And I think this most affects young men when it comes to pursuing the vocation of holy matrimony. It's no big secret. If you want to enter into holy matrimony, you have to have, if you're a boy, you have to have a girl. And you have to usually work at it a little bit because girls aren't usually lining up to just marry you. So there has to be a bit of a pursuit involved in it. But when young men aren't raised and aren't equipped with confidence, they're at a disadvantage. And I see this especially in Catholic circles and conservative Catholic colleges. The young men are too afraid, and the young, virtuous, lovely, chaste girls are frustrated because these young men don't do anything. They seem to be texting and hidden away in their apartments or dorm rooms, and they aren't engaging them. They aren't asking them on a laid-back date. They aren't saying, will you dance with me? They aren't saying, can I buy you a drink? All the classical ways in which men have engaged women. And these aren't necessarily, will you marry me? It's just, let's have a conversation and see if we like each other. So here's my advice for young men when it comes to confidence. And maybe, you know, you're 22 years old and you're super confident. Awesome. You keep rocking that. But if you're not, if you struggle in the area of confidence, I'm going to give you a few suggestions. Thomas Aquinas, following Aristotle once again, says that we are most happy when we are actualized rather than when we're in a state of potentiality. That's very philosophical. Here's what I mean. Potentiality means you're not actually doing something. You could be doing it, but you're not actually doing it. Actuality means you are actually doing it. If you're watching a football game on TV, you're in a state of potentiality. You could be playing football, but you're not. You're watching someone else do it. Actuality would be like, hey, let's go in the backyard and play football. You're actually throwing the ball, catching the ball, running around. Okay? Aristotle, and I think the medieval tradition after him, says, look, we are most happy, we are most fulfilled in the state of actualization. What's better? Thinking about virtues or actually developing virtues? Obviously, actualizing them. So in order to gain confidence, you need to actualize who you are. And there are certain things that give men confidence no matter what. One of them is being good at sports. Now, not all of us are good at sports. I'm not good at sports. My golf game, if you saw my scores, you'd say, yeah, Taylor, you're not good at sports. But sports is one of the ways that men get confidence. And I think most men are not natural athletes. So, you know, they go into other fields, and so they don't gain confidence from sports. But that's okay. There are other arenas in which you can find confidence. I would suggest to you fighting. That's right, fighting. Start taking some boxing classes. Get into martial arts, you know, and if you're worried about Eastern philosophies and Eastern religions, there are other alternatives. For example, check out, there's something called Sistema. It's a Russian martial art, often incorporates Christian themes, Christian icons, like the Russian Orthodox. I trained with some guys who were into Sistema, and they fast on Fridays as part of their martial arts training. They do penances. Some of them have penances, special training penances during Lent. That's an option. I've also done some other martial arts. I'm not really into it, but I have noticed that when you do martial arts, it definitely boosts your confidence, because all men want to know how well they do in a fight. Or if they see a guy who's a threat, they want to know, could I take him? I think it's just who we are as men. You want to know, where do I fit in the pecking order? Could I displace the alpha male? Martial arts is a way to gain that confidence. And yeah, you may never become Bruce Lee. You may, you know, and hopefully your goal isn't to become a UFC fighter, because very few men ascend to the top and most of them get hurt. But it will give you confidence. It'll give you physical strength. And it'll also give you knowledge on how to defend yourself and others. Also, I think there are recreational activities that give men confidence, because it provides many wins. And I've talked about this previously in the podcast. All of us, doesn't matter if you're male or female, you need many victories in your life. You need small victories to have progress, because small victories signal to your brain, hey, I'm actualizing myself. I'm not in a state of potentiality. I'm not passive. I am actualizing who I am. So this could mean, I think for men, catching a big bass or a trout. Go fishing. Go hunting. You know, I love to hunt. I've talked about it. I know some people get offended by it. I'm not bothered by it. Go hunting. If you hunt down, kill, and bring to the table food, it will boost your confidence. Guarantee it. Guarantee it. If you go through the whole process and your confidence doesn't go up, I'll buy you a steak. I'll send you a gift card to Outback. I promise you. Another thing is in the food prep. Guys, learn to cook. Learn your way around a grill. Learn how to cook a steak. Make awesome burgers. Women are very attracted to cooking. Why is this? Because in our ancestral days, if a man could get food and feed a woman and some kids and a bunch of people, that was sexually attractive. Women like men who can cook, and it builds up your confidence. So look for activities where you can have many victories. There are hundreds of them. I'm just giving you a few examples here, but you need to find confidence. If you're a single guy, I don't recommend this to the married men, but if you're a single guy and you see a hostess at a restaurant and she looks nice, modestly dressed, say, hey, I like your dress. Do things that you would normally not want to do. And as you do them, you'll become confident. Confidence is not cockiness. Confidence, you know, if you think about it in Latin, it means with faith. Confidence. You're doing something with faith, with trust. That's how we're supposed to live, with faith, with trust. Those who have faith will be as bold as a lion, because they realize it doesn't all hang on them. It's not all up to you. It's all up to God. And that gives you freedom to do amazing things. Okay, so that's confidence. The second one, and don't worry, we're going to get to some spiritual stuff. You may be thinking, why is Taylor talking about all that? He's supposed to talk about spiritual stuff. We're going to talk about spiritual stuff. But the second one doesn't sound so spiritual, but it's very important. Appearance. Appearance. This is not just your face. It's not just your body. It's not just your clothes or the car you drive. It's how you carry yourself. But it also incorporates everything else. I am surprised when I've done interviews for people to hire or interviews for internships, how some young men will dress. You think to yourself, I can't believe you wore that hoping to get a job. Because, and you might think, oh, Taylor, you're so judgmental. Maybe he didn't have any nice clothes. Listen, what you wear and how you look not 100%, not 100%, but maybe 50%, maybe, I don't know, communicates something about you. For example, if a young man comes to an interview and his hair is messed up and I can see where he had been sleeping on it, on a pillow, right? And it tells me he did not look in the mirror, or he didn't shower today, or he didn't use a comb today. All of those things tell me something about the way he operates. And all of those things would affect the way he does a job 6 months down the line or 12 months down the line. Those things are important. And let me tell you something, guys, when you're listening, women pick up on it way more than future employees or bosses. Women are much more in tune with the details of appearance than other men are of other men. For example, when a woman looks at a man, I'm talking about especially like a single woman, she's going to look at, she's going to notice things like, is there hair coming out of your nose? Is there hair coming out of your ears? All those gross things. Are you bathed? Do you smell right? All of these things. And if you don't have these things checked off on your box, you are not going to be successful. No matter how spiritual you think you are, or how awesome you are, or how confident you are, or you know how much kickboxing you do, if you don't project a sense of natural excellence, you're going to have a real hard time, both in the marriage realm and in the job realm. Because most of us, I'm going to say all of us, have limited time and limited attention. We are always looking for hacks and shortcuts in this life to make our life easier and more efficient. And one of the things that we do as human beings, whether it's right or wrong, I don't actually think it's right or wrong, you might think it is that we look for cues to help us make decisions more quickly. And sometimes we are wrong. Sometimes. But I think most of the time, the cues are correct. If it's night and a woman finds herself alone in a dark alley, and a man who is large and scary looking and wearing dirty and ragged clothes starts to approach her, she will begin to reach for her mace. Or if she's in Texas, she will begin to reach for her concealed handgun. And you know what? That's okay. Now, sometimes mistakes happen, but that's okay. And that's how women are operating all the time. They're looking for cues. They're looking for the way a man's eyes look at their body, because that tells them something about that man. They're looking at his hair. They're looking at his skin. They're looking at his clothes. Are they ironed and pressed, or are they wrinkled? They're looking at his shoes. Are they polished? Are you wearing basketball shoes? All of these things are telling her things about who this man likely is. She may have caught him on a bad day. That happens. But women are always using these cues, and women use these cues on other women as well. They are very intuitive. Women have an intuition. And part of that intuition that women have is their ability very quickly, within seconds, maybe even under a second, to size up other people based on countless clues. For example, my wife will pick up on things that I never see, and she's proved right. Why? Because, you know, she may say, these two people are not getting along. I'll say, no, they look like they're getting along fine. She's like, no, did you see their eyes? Did you see the way he moved when she said this? Did you see? And they'll pick up on all of these cues. And so if women have this power, and they do, it's a superpower, that means that you as a man need to be aware of your appearance, because you're throwing out hundreds of cues all the time. So it means you need to shave your face. You're not Ashton Kutcher. You're not a Hollywood star. Shave your face. It means you need to bathe regularly. You need to brush your teeth. You need to go to the dentist. You need to work out. You need to be in good shape. And all of these things are just common sense, because it's taking care of your body, which is the temple of the Holy Spirit. You need to dress properly for the right occasion. If you're going to meet a girl's parents, you need to know how to dress. If you're going on a picnic, you need to know how to dress. All of these things are important. You also need to know how to walk and how to carry yourself and how to throw your shoulders back and how to hold your head and how to properly look at a woman in a way that's not sleazy or disgusting or threatening, but in a way that's warm and friendly. You need to know how to smile. All of these things are really important. And they kind of circle back to confidence. If you're able to major on these items, you'll have more confidence as well. Okay, so we've tackled confidence. We've tackled the cues that you're sending out through your appearance. And third of all, we're looking at knowledge. Knowledge and skills. Let's just think back to the time of Abraham. He is not a farmer. He's not part of an agrarian society. He's left Babylon. He's moving across the Middle East. He becomes extremely wealthy. If you go back and read in Genesis, Abraham is a very wealthy man. He is highly revered. He is highly respected by the neighboring cities and chieftains and tribes. What would a guy like Abraham need to survive? He needs knowledge and he needs skills. He needs to know, in Abraham's case, about livestock. He needs to know how to breed livestock, to cultivate livestock. He needs to know about the weather. He needs to know about watering areas. He needs to know how to dig wells and find water when there's a drought. He needs to know how to protect animals from predators. He needs to know how to raise a family. He knows his religion. He's a spiritual man. He knows geography. Presumably he drew maps or had some kind of a knowledge of where he was going and what he was doing. He needed to know how to barter. He needed to know perhaps several languages. He needed to know how to interact and engage with cities and cultures that disagreed with him. For the most part, cities and cultures that did not believe in the one true God as he did. In other words, a guy like Abraham had to have a lot of skills. He had to have a lot of knowledge. And if you lived back then, other people, other men, but in particular women, would have been attracted by necessity to men like Abraham. He had great knowledge. He had great skill. So, for men, you need to get out a sheet of paper and grab a pencil and write down, what are my skills? As Pedro Sanchez so eloquently stated.
Like, what are my skills?
Well, you have a sweet bike. Plus, you're like the only guy at school who has a mustache.
That's true.
If you need to use any of my skills, I can do whatever you want.
Thanks.
By the way, these clips are coming from one of my favorite movies of all time, Napoleon Dynamite. If you haven't seen it, don't waste any time. Go watch it. Okay, so knowledge and skills. You need to get this sheet of paper. What are your skills? What are you good at? Can you fix cars? Can you draw? Can you cook? Can you do social media? Can you do marketing? Can you build software? Are you an engineer? What are your skills? Also, what is your knowledge? People like interesting people. Women are attracted to smart men. Why are they attracted to smart men? For the same reason a woman like Sarah would have been attracted to Abraham. If you're smart, you can help her. You can help her. You can help her survive. You can help her solve problems. You can help grow a family. You can do a lot of stuff. You know, it's good to have big muscles and strong hands, but ultimately you want a strong mind. You want knowledge, because then you can solve problems. And who does not have problems? So this is why you need to develop this third arena, your knowledge and your skills. This brings us to our last arena, of excellence for young men, and that is your spirituality. This is the most important. This is the home base. The other one was the previous ones were like a first base, second base, third base, a single, a double, a triple. This is the home run. If you don't have this one, you fail in everything else. You got to develop a spirituality. The best way for a young man with a busy life to develop a spirituality is to break it up into time units. Time units. Daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly. The only way to get good at anything in life is to put in thousands and thousands of hours. If you want to be good at sword fighting, spend thousands of hours doing it. If you want to be good at repairing cars as a mechanic, spend thousands of hours doing it. If you want to make videos, spend thousands of hours making videos. You must put in the time. And since your spirituality, your walk with Jesus Christ, your pursuit of being one of his disciples, growing in the Holy Spirit, you must put in thousands of hours in your spirituality. How do you do that? You set a time frame. So you're going to have a goal for every day, for every week, for every month, and for every year. I've talked about how to set goals. Usually at the beginning of every year, I talk about how to make goals that will work, goals that will be kept. And the secret is specificity and being able to measure them. You want to have specific goals. For example, I want to be in better shape is a horrible goal because it doesn't mean anything. Being in better shape doesn't mean anything. It's very subjective. A good goal is I want to lose 8 pounds before June 1st. That's a great goal because it tells you exactly what you need to do and exactly when you need to do it by. And this applies to all life. You want to be successful in your career, this is how you need to approach everything. This is how, for example, at the New St. Thomas Institute, I say we need this many videos on this topic by this date. And what do we need to do to make sure all of these things happen by that date? Everything has to be run on a time frame with goals and with achievables and with rewards and everything. It has to all be planned out. So your spirituality must be planned. If you're going to assume that somehow you're just going to become a really strong Christian and you're really going to grow in your faith and you're really going to meet that holy, beautiful woman of your dreams just by kind of going along, you're wrong. You made a critical judgment error just right then. Good things in the spiritual life don't just kind of happen. You must plan and prepare. It's like a survival retreat. You must plan your next step or you could die. It's that important. And by death, in this case, I mean mortal sin, going to hell, falling. So here's what you need to do. A daily goal, a weekly goal, a monthly goal, and an annual goal. Your daily goal should be to pray 2 times a day. One of those ideally would be the Mass. The other one ideally would be the Rosary, if I could pick them for you. That doesn't always work because of college or travel or work. Or family, I understand that. So a morning prayer and an evening prayer. Ideally, the morning prayer would be Mass. The evening prayer would be a daily rosary. So there you go. And a daily examination of conscience. Every single day you should do that. So when you go to sleep at night, you should ask yourself, did I do my daily plan? Did I pray in the morning? Did I pray in the evening? And it's just a yes or no. It's a pass fail. I did it or I didn't do it. I'm praying every day or I'm not praying every day. And then you just adjust course as you go. And you got 365 chances every year. That's your daily spirituality. And when you pray, it's not just doing something rote. It's talking to God. Talking to Jesus. Jesus, I had a horrible day today. Let me tell you about it. I had a great day today. Let me tell you about it. I'm really struggling with this in my life. I need you to work a miracle. I need you to do something. Please, Jesus, through your blood, please do it. That's the kind of thing you need to be doing every day. All right. Weekly, you need to go to Mass every Sunday. That should be your weekly goal. Ideally, you're going every day. You can never miss Mass. It's a holy day of obligation. And when you go to Mass, you don't just check in and check out. You actually try to pray. And you talk to Jesus about all the things in your life every single week. I would add on to this the practice of confession. And you can either make this a weekly, every 2 weeks, or a monthly. For young men in the world we live today, which is perverse and filled with billboards and pornography and sketchy stuff on TV and sketchy stuff on the radio and sketchy stuff in movies, I think a week or every 2 weeks is what young men should go for. I think 2 weeks is safe. 2 weeks every month, probably not enough. Every 2 weeks, ideal. Every week, even better. So that brings us to our monthly goal. So far we have our daily, two times a day of prayer, our weekly Mass every Sunday, maybe also adding in confession every week, but definitely every 2 weeks. Monthly, definitely got to go to confession every month. I wouldn't go any further than that. You're getting into trouble when you wait over a month. But also I would challenge you to have a monthly virtue that you work on. So every year you're going to have 12 virtues that you're going to work on. So you say, you know, this month I'm going to work on fortitude. Fortitude is courage. It's being brave. And I'm going to do things every day or every week, or I'm going to make a project that's going to challenge me in fortitude. And then do it for a whole month. And then the next month, you know, I'm really going to go for prudence. I'm going to make good decisions. I'm going to make good decisions about what I eat, good decisions of how I work out, good decisions of who I hang out with, good decisions about the movies I watch, good decisions about the people I hang out with. I'm going to make good decisions. I'm going to do prudence. So you do a monthly virtue. You might also consider a monthly penance. Perhaps the penance goes with the virtue you're working on. Maybe you struggle with gluttony, overeating. So your penance for the month is you say, every Friday, I'm just going to eat one meal for this month. That's my penance. And I'm going to offer that for the conversion of my family. Or I'm going to offer that for finding the beautiful, wonderful, godly spouse of my dreams. All right, so you got that monthly virtue, perhaps a monthly penance. And then annually, yearly, I think you need to reassess all your goals every year, but you also need to do an annual retreat. This doesn't have to be, you know, on some mountain somewhere. You don't have to get on an airplane to do a retreat. This could be a 1 day, a 2 day, a 3 day. I know not all of us have a lot of vacation time, and you may not want to spend your vacation time on a retreat. Maybe a 2 day or 3 day weekend where you go off alone, maybe to a local monastery. Maybe you go out into the woods with a tent and a Bible and you lock your cell phone in the car and you just get out there with God and you think about your life. You need every year to get away from your desk, to get away from your house, to get away from your TV, to get away from your refrigerator, to get away from your friends and your family and your coworkers, and to just be quiet and be alone and to reassess. That's one of the things I'm really looking forward to when I go to Rome. Is I'm going to take a weekend and I'm just going to have it in another country. I'm just going to be alone. I'm going to think about everything, about my marriage and about our kids and about the new St. Thomas Institute and about, you know, this podcast and about, you know, maybe a conference and, you know, speaking and all the things that I'm involved in. I just want to get away and get with God and say, am I doing it right? Do I need to drop something? Do I need to add something? Do I need to modify something? How can I be in tune with you, Almighty God? So that's your annual retreat. So I think if you do these four levels of goal, daily, weekly, monthly, annual, you will put in literally thousands of hours every year to becoming a godly man, the kind of man that a godly, beautiful girl is going to want to marry. The best way for you to find her is to work on yourself first. Become that man who has confidence, who has a great appearance and projects excellence into the world by his very presence, who has knowledge and skills, and then who has a profound, deep relationship with Jesus Christ, the Lord of his life. There it is, young men. There's your assignment. Do it. This is advice on how to be a holy and good man. I wish someone had told me all these things way back when I was 16 years old. Well, hey, I'd love to hear your comments. Maybe you have some advice for these young men who are trying to make a place for themselves in the world. They will lead us in the decades to come. So let's pray for them. Young man, I'd love to hear from you. Leave a comment over at taylormarshall.com under this episode, episode 72, Advice on How to Be a Man. I'd love to see your comments, your questions, your advice, your prayer requests, everything. And ladies out there, if you're still listening to all this advice about men, pray for these young men that they become great men of God, perhaps great husbands and fathers, and perhaps great priests and bishops and cardinals and popes. Well, we'll move on to our tip of the week and our Latin word of the week. Again, before we jump on to the tip of the week, I want to encourage you to subscribe to this podcast. We got the series, 10 to 12 part series, hopefully, on the book of Revelation, and you're not going to want to miss this. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to go through the entire book of Revelation. So what you need to do is you need to be, to get the resources, go to taylormarshall.com and make sure you're signed up on my daily Catholic email updates. And then I'd really encourage you to go to iTunes and search in there for the Taylor Marshall Show and subscribe. And I'm also this week want to do a review of the week. I do shout outs to everyone who leaves a review, but this week I wanted to do a review of the week. It was a review that someone left that I thought was really good, and I wanted to share it with y'all. This review comes from a lady named Jennifer, and Jennifer writes this, quote, "As a relatively new convert to the Catholic faith, I appreciate Taylor's very practical and upbeat application of the immensely rich fullness of Christian faith to life. I'm inspired every time I listen, and I can take away something tangible to try to live my faith more fully, both in my family and my job. Thanks." Well, thank you, Jennifer, and this is really the goal. As Catholics, we believe in faith and works. We can't just believe all this stuff and talk about this stuff and listen to this stuff. We have to do it. It has to be, as Jennifer says, tangible. Whatever you learn in your faith, whatever you get from reading the scriptures, reading the saints, reading church history, listening to a homily, listening to a podcast, you must take it, take the seeds that you get and plant them in rich soil. Make it tangible. Or as we said earlier in the podcast, don't just keep it potential, actualize it, because your greatest happiness, your greatest joy will come from actualization. Now, our tip of the week is to talk to an elder. This morning, I spent time with my grandmother. She's 85. Please pray for her. She's been fighting cancer, and things have kind of turned for the worse. Her name is Rosemary. Please pray for her that she has a happy and holy death. I love her to death. I love you, Nana. And please, please pray for her. But I was sitting with her for a few hours and talking about her childhood and her life and what it was like growing up in the Depression, and her mother and her father and her evil stepmother that she had and her sister, and all these stories that I kind of heard, but heard them in detail. And it was surreal because I thought it seemed like I was listening to a human experience that was so far removed from what I experienced with my own children, especially the context of the Depression. And I realized that the wealth that I experience in the 21st century here in America, here in Texas, is absolutely amazing compared to what they had back then. And then just hearing her stories and hearing about what their bathrooms were like and, you know, how they bathed and how they went to school and what their church was like, I just realized how much wisdom is locked away in my Nana's mind from a bygone era. And I thought to myself, this has to be the tip of the week in this week's podcast. Talk to an elder. And I think for young men especially, there's a crisis in masculinity. There's a crisis in fatherhood. And a lot of young men don't have fathers to talk to. Young men, find a mentor. Find an older man, maybe in his 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, who's raised children, who's been married maybe 40, 50 years, who's seen it all, who's fought in a war, right? Who's had life experiences that you haven't even begun to think about. Talk to an elder. That's the tip of the week. So don't just think, oh, that's a good idea, Taylor. I like it. No, when you finish this podcast, or maybe while you're listening to it right now, put it on your calendar. Thursday, 5 p.m., call my grandfather. Thursday, 5 p.m., call my great aunt. Or this Sunday, that really nice old man in the Knights of Columbus, I'm going to ask him if I can take him to coffee and get his perspective on my job or his perspective on growing a family or whatever it is. Talk to an elder. All right, our Latin word of the week is campio. Campio, it's a later medieval Latin word, campio, and it means champion. It's actually where we get the word in English, champion, from campio. And campio itself comes from the Latin word campus, where we get the word campus in English. And a campus we think of as a college campus, a place of education, a place of recreation. But in Latin, campus really means a field. It's a field. And a champion is one who is in the field, but who excels. He excels over the others. And I want to challenge young men to be a campio, a champion, one who's out in the field, perhaps on the campus in college, but out in the field of the world, out in the real world, who is becoming a champion. He is excelling on the field of business, field of spirituality, the field of education, the field of knowledge and skills, appearance, confidence, marriage, everything. So campio means a champion. It's one who excels on the campus, on the field. Well, hey, thanks so much for listening this week. Look for new podcast, the new series on the Book of Revelation coming at the beginning of June. So there'll probably be at least one more non-Book of Revelation podcast coming out in the next week or so. And please pray for my grandmother, Rosemary, my Nana. And please pray for my family and myself and all the seminarians who will be part of the Rome experience this summer at the Vatican. I might be recording some of the mini podcasts, just some short podcasts and some reflections while I'm over there. So in the meantime, remember our Lord Jesus Christ, that you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. So go out there and be salty.
This podcast was brought to you by the new St. Thomas Institute. Discover online Catholic classes and earn your certificate in Catholic theology at the new St. Thomas Institute. To register for online Catholic classes, please visit newstthomas.com. That's newstthomas.com.